Every single day we are pitched this this really incredible promise by almost every AI tool out there on the market.
Right, the classic saved hours pitch.
Exactly. It's
Yeah.
always the same fundamental pitch, right? Saved hours. I mean, it is marketed to us like this miracle diet for time management.
Oh, absolutely. Just install this agent and boom, your calendar is clear.
Yeah, you just implement this new language model, and suddenly you're going to trim all the fat right off your work week. You'll be clocking out at 3 p.m., taking, long, leisurely walks, maybe finally learning how to paint or something.
It sounds great in theory.
It does. But I want you to really look at your own schedule for a second. Like, genuinely ask yourself, are you actually going home any earlier?
I mean, that is the defining question of modern knowledge work, isn't it? And the short answer for the vast majority of us, anyway, is just no.
No, not at all.
Right. We are generating significantly more output, certainly. And we might feel like we're moving much faster through our individual
Yeah,
tasks.
you feel productive.
Exactly. But the calendar hasn't magically cleared up to make room for those afternoon walks. The friction hasn't vanished. It has simply, well, migrated to a completely different part of the system.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the central mystery we are investigating today is basically the case of the vanishing AI hour.
It's a great way to frame it.
Thanks. And we are pulling from a really fascinating stack of sources for this deep dive. Our anchor today is this deeply insightful essay written by a seasoned engineering leader, and they manage like over 250 people.
Which gives them a very real on-the-ground perspective.
Yes, exactly. What makes their perspective so compelling is that they take their own frontline management experience and they layer it over 150 years of economic history.
And they back it up with data, too.
Oh, a mountain of it. Brand new workplace data from METR, UC Berkeley, and ActiveTrack. So our mission for this deep dive is to track down exactly where your saved hours are actually going, why they seemingly vanish into thin air, and how you can actually reclaim them before the corporate machine just absorbs them by default.
I love that mission because to truly understand why this time disappears, we have to realize that we are not the first generation to deal with this.
We're really not.
No, we need to look at the broader context of technological history. I mean, every major software revolution comes packaged with the exact same promise of reclaimed time.
And every time, we kind of fall for it.
Every single time, we fall for the exact same illusion.
Well, our sources actually start with a story that perfectly captures this illusion. It takes us back to the dawn of the last major software revolution. We're talking about the era of the spreadsheet.
Oh, this is such a good example. The author of our main source shares this incredible anecdote about Bill Coleman.
Right, the co-founder of BEA Systems.
Yep, and he was an early product development leader at VisiCorp. And just for some context for you listening, VisiCorp is the company that developed VisiCalc, which was literally the very first spreadsheet software ever created for personal computers.
So before VisiCalc was a thing, how is financial reporting actually getting done? I can't even imagine.
Painfully. I mean, Coleman explained that finalizing a public company's quarterly earnings report used to be this grueling, highly manual process. It took 6 full weeks of pure arithmetic.
6 weeks just doing math.
Just doing math by hand.
Yeah.
Picture a massive physical wall of ledger paper just completely covered in numbers.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And if a CFO wanted to change a single assumption, say, adjusting a projected growth rate by just 1%, an army of accountants had to physically erase and recalculate that entire wall of numbers by hand.
That sounds like a nightmare. So the finance team spent almost the entirety of their 6 week reporting cycle just doing basic mind-numbing math.
Exactly.
But then the spreadsheet enters the picture, right? You change one cell, hit enter, and the software instantly cascades that new variable through the entire document.
It was revolutionary.
It had to be. I mean, by all logical measures, a process that used to be 90% manual arithmetic should have collapsed from 6 weeks down to maybe, I don't know, 3 days.
You would certainly think so.
Right.
But how long did the reporting cycle take after the spreadsheet was fully integrated? It still took 6 weeks.
Wait, really?
Yeah, the time didn't disappear at all. The software just shifted the bottleneck.
So what were they doing for 6 weeks then?
Well, instead of spending their time doing manual arithmetic, those financial teams just started running more scenarios.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they stress tested wildly different economic assumptions. They ask much better, deeper questions of the exact same numbers. The spreadsheet fundamentally altered the nature and the value of the work, but it did absolutely nothing to shorten the calendar.
Okay, wait, I have to stop you there. Because if the tool made the math virtually instantaneous, why didn't the accountants just finish the standard baseline report in a week, hand it to the boss, and take a 5-week vacation.
I mean, that's what we don't want to do, right?
Yeah. If they achieve the original goal faster, why not just bank the time?
Because that assumes a static environment, and business is never static.
That makes sense.
The moment the cost of running a financial scenario plummeted basically to zero, the demand for financial insight skyrocketed. The CFO suddenly wanted to see what happens if inflation goes up 2%, or, you know, what if they open a new branch in Tokyo?
So the time savings basically created a vacuum.
Exactly. A vacuum that demand just rushed in to fill. And AI is running this exact same experiment on software development and general knowledge work right now.
So we're the accountants in this scenario.
We are, yes. AI tools create real capacity, but the bottleneck isn't the technology itself. The bottleneck is whether leadership or you managing your own day, can explicitly decide what that newly created capacity is actually for.
Right, because if you don't intentionally decide, the time just evaporates. So if we aren't taking 5-week vacations, where's the time actually going?
The sources map out some really clear historical precedents for this.
Yeah, if it doesn't go to leisure, the first alternative is that the saved time simply buys more volume, right?
Yeah, precisely. We see this principle dating all the way back to 1865. It was documented by an economist named William Stanley Jevons in his book, The Coal Question.
Ah, the famous Jevons paradox.
Yes. He observed this really strange phenomenon. When steam engines became vastly more fuel efficient, you'd think Britain would use less coal, right?
Right, because they don't need as much to get the same power.
Exactly. But they didn't consume less coal.
They just put steam engines on absolutely everything.
You got it. The efficiency made steam power dramatically cheaper, which massively expanded its industrial applications. And that drove the total demand for coal completely through the roof.
So when efficiency lowers the cost of an activity, demand just grows to consume all the savings.
Exactly. We saw this in the modern era with those very same spreadsheets we were just talking about.
Oh, yeah. The sources cite a Planet Money report on this.
Right. It showed that between 1980 and 2015, the U.S. lost about 400,000 bookkeeping and accounting clerk jobs.
Which sounds bad initially.
It does. But in that exact same window, we gained 600,000 advanced accountant jobs. Financial analysis got cheap to produce, so clients just bought a lot more of it.
And today, generating code or generating written text is the new cheap resource.
Exactly. So companies were just going to attempt more software variations, more marketing copy, just more pure volume.
It's like buying a larger hard drive for your computer. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't end up with a beautifully organized drive full of empty digital space.
Never happens.
No. You just start downloading 4K movies instead of 1080p, and you keep downloading until the new capacity is flashing red again. You just expand to fill the void.
That is the Jevons paradox in a nutshell. But volume isn't the only outcome.
Right.
If we don't just produce more of the same thing, the second destination for save time is that it raises the bar for quality.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because I think we all feel this happening right now.
Oh, for sure. Ruth Schwartz Cowan explored this in her book, More Work for Mother. She traced the history of household technologies, things like washing machines and vacuum cleaners.
And the marketing for all that stuff promised endless leisure time, right?
Endless. But think about it. Before the washing machine, doing laundry was an exhausting all-day physical affair.
So people didn't do it as often.
Exactly. Society only expected clothes to be washed occasionally. But once the machine made the physical labor easier, society simply decided that everyone should wear impeccably clean clothes every single day.
Wow. So the standard for acceptable cleanliness just absorbed the efficiency completely.
It did. Yeah. And our engineering source maps this directly onto software development today. Because AI makes writing raw code faster, the definition of a completed project just inflates.
Yeah, let's say you're working in a sprint, which is just a designated short time frame, usually a couple of weeks, where a team promises to deliver a specific chunk of work.
Right.
The timeline of the sprint doesn't change. But suddenly you're expected to deliver more automated tests, more visual polish, and handle way more edge cases.
Which are those rare, weird user scenarios that teams used to just ignore to save time. The baseline expectation for what constitutes good enough simply climbs to consume those saved hours.
Which is exhausting to think about.
It really is. And when a machine takes over the core generation task entirely, we see a third historical destination.
Which is that the save time becomes completely new work.
Right. James Bessin, an economist, studied the introduction of ATMs. When automatic tellers rolled out, the widespread fear was that human bank tellers would basically go extinct.
Because the machine hands out the cash.
Exactly. But instead, the machines handled the basic cash counting, which made operating a bank branch much cheaper. So banks just opened way more branches.
Oh, wow. So the total number of human tellers actually grew.
It did. But their daily tasks shifted completely away from counting bills and moved toward customer relationship management and selling credit cards.
And in the AI era, our sources argue that the equivalent of selling credit cards is verification. Like, the AI writes the Python script or drafts the marketing email in 3 seconds. But prompting it correctly, reading the output, evaluating it for hallucinations, and testing its logic, that workload doesn't vanish.
Not at all. The human job just shifts from the act of generating to the act of verifying.
Which leaves us with the final theoretical destination for our saved hours, which is that the time actually comes back to you as leisure.
The dream. This was the famous promise made by economist John Maynard Keynes back in 1930. He predicted that technological productivity would be so high by the 21st century that we would all be working 15-hour weeks.
Which is just tragically hilarious in hindsight.
It really is.
But people still desperately want that outcome. Our sources point to a recent Zoom and Morning Consult survey where 76% AI users report saving at least 30 minutes a day, and 73% of them state they intend to use that time for a dedicated lunch break.
Yeah, well, intend is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence.
For real.
It measures their genuine desire for rest, sure. But as the author points out, history shows we overwhelmingly consume productivity gains as increased output, not as free time on the couch.
I can hear a listener right now thinking, you know, well, I'm different. I have boundaries. If this tool saves me an hour, I'm going to slam my laptop shut and take my dog for a walk.
Good luck with that.
Right. Because the data in our sources shows there is an invisible systemic law actively fighting against that boundary.
That law was articulated in 1955 by Cyril Northcote Parkinson, famously known as Parkinson's Law.
Right.
It states, basically, work expands so as to fill the time available for its completion. It actually originated as a piece of satire critiquing the bloat of the British civil service.
But it's so true.
It is. In modern corporate life, it operates like a strict law of physics.
Oliver Berkman writes about this in his book, 4,000 Weeks. He calls it the efficiency trap.
Yes, great concept.
Think about your email inbox. If you get incredibly fast and efficient at replying to emails, you don't end up with a beautifully empty inbox by noon.
No, definitely not.
All you've done is teach your colleagues that you are a highly responsive person. They reply to your quick reply. The world just rewards your efficiency by sending you more email.
It's a vicious cycle. And we finally have the hard workplace data proving this exact trap is springing shut on AI users today.
Let's hear the data.
Well, the sources cite a massive study by ActiveTrack analyzing over 10,000 employees using AI tools. They found that after adopting AI, the time these employees spent in essentially every measured work category went up.
Every category.
Basically, time spent on email rose by 104%. Time spent in chat and messaging apps rose by 145%. Use of business management tools went up 94%.
Okay, but wait. If they were spending exponentially more time talking about work and managing work, what actually dropped?
Daily focus time.
Wow.
Yeah. The uninterrupted blocks of time meant for deep, concentrated thought actually fell by 9%.
That is entirely counterintuitive to the pitch of AI.
Completely backward.
And this is perfectly illustrated by that UC Berkeley Haas ethnography.
Mm-hmm.
The researchers basically embedded themselves in a 200-person tech company for 8 months just to quietly observe how human behavior changed when AI was introduced.
And what they found was wild.
Yeah, they found that employees didn't use the tools to create breathing room. Instead, they just drastically broadened the scope of what they were doing.
Right. They documented employees keeping multiple AI agents running simultaneously on different monitors.
Like spinning plates?
Exactly. But the most striking finding was what happened to the natural pauses in the day.
Oh, this part is so relatable.
Before AI, if you were waiting for a massive file to render or waiting for a code to compile, you had like 5 minutes of downtime. You might stare out the window, grab a coffee, let your brain rest.
Just a normal human break.
Right. But with AI, employees took those five-minute windows and jammed in extra tasks, like having an agent summarize an unrelated meeting transcript. They optimized the mental white space entirely out of their own calendars.
Are we just doing this to ourselves, though? Is this just a modern societal addiction to looking busy, where sitting still staring out a window feels like a moral failing, so we compulsively fill the gap?
What's fascinating here is that framing it as an individual failing misses the broader dynamic.
Really? How so?
Well, the environment itself adjusts to the new capability. When a tool makes juggling three complex projects feel possible, the organizational baseline shifts.
Oh, I see.
Managing three projects simply becomes the new standard expectation for your role. You aren't necessarily addicted to busyness. You are adapting to an environment that has effortlessly absorbed your newfound slack.
Which brings us to the most difficult problem in this entire deep dive.
The math.
The math. If the corporate system is naturally designed to consume our time, how do we even begin to accurately measure what AI is allegedly giving back to us?
It's really tough.
The engineering leader, who wrote our primary source, argues that we are all suffering from a massive accounting blind spot. We are throwing parades for what they call gross savings, but we are completely turning a blind eye to the debt of review.
The distinction between gross and net time is the most vital concept here. The gross dividend is the hour the AI saved you from physically typing on your keyboard.
Which feels amazing.
It does. But to achieve that hour, you had to spend time crafting a precise prompt. You had to wait for the system to generate the output. You had to meticulously review that output for subtle errors, correct those errors, and then coordinate with your team about the final product.
That is a lot of hidden work.
Exactly. All of that verification work is a hidden tax on your saved hour.
To use another analogy, it's like getting your very first professional paycheck. The gross savings is the salary you see on the job offer. It looks massive and life-changing.
Oh, yeah.
But the net dividend is what actually hits your bank account after federal taxes, start taxes, health insurance premiums, and retirement contributions. With AI, those taxes, the prompting, the reworking, the verifying, they're taking a much larger cut of the paycheck than people realize.
They take such a large cut that they can completely distort our perception of time itself.
Which is mind-blowing.
This is where the study by METR comes in. So METR gave 246 real-world coding tasks to 16 highly experienced open-source developers.
And for context, open-source developers build public software that anyone can use and scrutinize, so they're generally operating at a very high skill level.
Very high. But when these developers used AI to complete the task, it actually took them 19% longer to finish the work compared to doing it themselves.
Taking 19% longer is a massive loss of productivity.
Huge.
But the crazy part of that study is the survey they did afterward. Subjectively, those exact same developers stated they believed the AI had made them 20% faster.
It's an incredible delusion.
How do you explain a 40-point swing between the objective clock on the wall and their internal perception?
It comes down to the mechanics of cognitive load. When you are writing a piece of complex code from scratch, your hands are moving, you are constantly making micro decisions, and you really feel the physical friction of creation.
It feels like work.
Right. When an AI generates that code instantly, that specific friction vanishes. But the friction is replaced by the burden of verification.
It's like the difference between taking a math test and grading a math test.
That's a great way to put it.
When you're taking the test, you feel every second of the work. When you're grading someone else's test, your hands aren't cramping up from writing, so it feels less manual. Mm. But hunting for the subtle flaw in their logic actually drains incredible mental energy and can take longer on the clock.
Exactly. The physical relief masks the cognitive drain. Now, to be fair, not every study shows a net loss of time.
Right. There is some good news.
The sources include data from the St. Louis Federal Reserve indicating that generative AI users do generally save time overall. It averages about 5.4% of their working hours.
Okay, so in a standard 40-hour work week, that translates to roughly 2.2 hours saved.
Right.
2.2 hours is a really tricky number, though. Because on one hand, 2 extra hours is absolutely enough time to matter.
Yeah.
You can do deep, meaningful work in 2 hours.
Or take a very long lunch.
Exactly. But on the other hand, it's just small enough to easily vanish into 3 extra email threads and 1 unnecessary Zoom meeting without you ever noticing you had a surplus to begin with.
Which is exactly why the author of our main source proposes a mandatory exercise for anyone using these tools. They call it the AI time ledger.
Okay, how does that work?
You basically have to calculate the math explicitly. The formula is your net dividend equals your gross time removed minus the time spent prompting, waiting, reviewing, reworking, and coordinating.
So only the time left over after all that overhead is your true allocatable capacity. Let's actually walk through what that looks like in practice for you listening right now. Say I'm tasked with writing a weekly update report for my department. Normally, compiling the data and typing it up takes me a full 60 minutes.
Okay, standard task.
This week, I feed my notes into an AI agent, and it spits out a draft in exactly 5 minutes. My brain immediately registers a gross savings of 55 minutes. I feel like a genius.
Right, you feel like you just bought yourself an hour. But now we have to apply the ledger's taxes.
Hit me.
You spent 3 minutes writing the prompt. The agent's tone was entirely too casual, so you spent 10 minutes rewriting the intro so you don't sound completely unhinged to your boss.
True. It always uses the word delve.
Always. Then you spent another 12 minutes hunting down a hallucinated statistic the AI just invented, and finally, 5 minutes formatting the document. That's 30 minutes of verification overhead.
Wow. Okay, so I take my 55 minutes of gross savings, subtract my 30 minutes of taxes, and my actual net dividend, the real time I get to put in the bank, is 25 minutes.
Precisely. And once you have that real number, the ultimate question becomes, who actually gets to decide where those 25 minutes go?
Right.
The sources bring in a fantastic framework from the writer David Brooks for this. He notes, quote, "When intelligence is plentiful, volition is valuable."
Volition.
Yeah. Volition is your power to intentionally choose and take action. If you do not actively exercise your volition over those 25 minutes, then Jevons becomes your portfolio manager, filling that time with more volume. And Parkinson runs your calendar, expanding your existing work until the day is gone.
So what does this all mean for us at day to day? Our sources offer a few different philosophies for how you might use this volition.
Yeah, there are a few schools of thought.
Cal Newport, in his book Slow Productivity, argues you should use that net dividend to do fewer things, work at a more natural pace, and obsess over the quality of the output.
I like that approach. And David Brooks argues for using the time on deeply effortful work that builds your unique human capability. Basically, don't let the AI do the heavy lifting of actual thinking for you.
And from an organizational standpoint, our engineering leader suggests structural choices. Like, if a team banks enough net dividends, they should use it to tackle technical debt.
Yes. Going back and fixing all that clunky, patched-together code the team rushed out last year so it doesn't crash the system later.
They also suggest protecting time for apprenticeship, ensuring junior staff still learn how to build things from scratch so that short-term speed doesn't destroy long-term judgment.
Crucial point.
Or, most radically, explicitly protecting that unproductive slack time, because human beings fundamentally need time to think.
Imagine that. Time to think. The absolute worst thing a leader can do is vaguely label the whole phenomenon productivity, quietly absorb it into higher baseline expectations, and pretend no deliberate choice was ever made.
But I have to ask you this on behalf of our listeners. If I'm managing 250 people, I can mandate these policies. But if I'm just a regular individual contributor, how do I defend my 25-minute net dividend without my boss just stealing it by assigning me more work?
It's the ultimate question. If we connect this to the bigger picture, making the trade-off visible is the mandatory first step, regardless of your place in the corporate hierarchy.
Okay, so you have to speak up.
You cannot negotiate an honest bargain about your workload if neither you nor your manager actually understands the true cost of the AI overhead. By tracking your own ledger, you transform a vague, exhausted feeling of busyness into empirical data.
That is so empowering.
It is. You can go to your boss and say, look, using AI to draft these reports saves me an hour of typing, but costs me 35 minutes of rigorous review. I have 25 net minutes left. Should I use it to refine the data analysis on this project or start drafting the next one? You force the allocation conversation to happen out loud in the daylight.
You transform a systemic drift into a deliberate choice.
Perfectly said.
Well, we have covered an incredible amount of ground today. We started with the illusion of the 6-week spreadsheet reporting cycle, traced how efficiency historically just buys volume or raises expectations, and exposed the invisible taxes of AI prompting that actively consume our perceived time savings.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. The core takeaway from all these sources is that technology only creates options. It is your volition that dictates the final outcome. The goal here isn't to reject efficiency, it's to stop unexamined reinvestment.
Exactly.
But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder that builds on everything we've discussed today. If AI tools continue to compress individual tasks, and organizations instinctively raise their baseline expectations to consume that newly created slack, are we heading toward an era of productivity inflation?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, think about it. An era where human time effectively becomes devalued, and you'll eventually need to deploy your own personal AI agent just to negotiate a fair workload or even just a decent lunch break with your company's AI manager.
That's entirely possible.
It's a bit terrifying. So think about that the next time you ask an AI to summarize a long email thread for you. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Your assignment this week is to take on that AI time ledger challenge. Track your gross savings, subtract your taxes, and see where your net dividend is actually going. Let's see if your work week can start looking a little less like an endless treadmill and a little more like a conscious choice.